Chapter 10. When she could no longer hear Clodagh, she flipped on her goggles and went for the knife, her fingers scrabbling around the pile of decaying fabric and goods. She also took the rope and the dead man's belt. The knife was a rough thing, probably made by sharpening a spoon, but it would serve to slice open the wax, if her foot couldn't do it first. She crawled to the newly melted wax wall and put a hand against it, testing where it might be weakest, right at the seam. That's when she heard the pew-pew-pew of blaster fire and an answering, furious buzz that built to a maddening crescendo. So Clodagh had woken the stupefied Apodactyls, further hindering her chase. Of course he was smart like that. But even if the old pirate hadn't taught her all his tricks, he'd taught her enough. When you couldn't go through the front door, you found a window. When there wasn't a window, you made one. She'd already slipped on leather gloves and stabbed the knife into the cell's ceiling when the first Dax flew into the room. Judging by the satisfied sound of their buzzing and the coppery smell and wet splats, they were getting their revenge on what was left of Arik Nightdrifter. Clodagh's right cross was as lethal as it had ever been. Shadows flickered against the wax wall, razor-sharp legs probing it as if sensing something deeply wrong. She didn't know how intelligent the insects might be, and she didn't want to stick around long enough to find out. As soon as her knife had broken through the brittle wax overhead, she began peeling large chunks of it away with her hands. She'd begun her bolt hole in the center of the cell, halfway between the insects outside and the corpse within, hoping all the burial cells were set up like this one. That meant that when she crawled upward into the cell nearest the ceiling, she wouldn't be directly under another rotting body. She could smell it, though, and that was enough. This cell was darker, and she recalibrated her goggles to rummage through the pile of goods, finding a coil of insulated wire, a pair of wire clippers, and another sorry excuse for a knife. Such a shame that the stormtrooper armor was outside with the monsters instead of inside with the men who had worn it. She could have put that armor to good use right now. The buzzing outside grew louder and more frantic, and she could only assume that the creatures were amassing to pull their own hive apart to find the fresh meat of the interloper inside. She hacked at the thick wax on the ceiling, but it was heavier and harder to break through. Her gloves wore through and her knuckles burned and bled. When she did get a good chunk out, she found standard white ceiling tile behind it, which was promising. The insects might have built their home to last, but ceiling tiles were meant to be replaced often enough to keep the bigger galactic corporations in business. She took glee in stabbing the whiteboard until it fell apart in brittle pieces. Soon, Basine had a proper hole in the ceiling, just wide enough for her, and hopefully the wrong shape and size for any hungry Dax who tried to follow. She stood, gathered up her tools, and pulled herself carefully into the thick, hot air of the building's attic. She hated dust and muck, but never had dust and muck smelled so good. There wasn't enough room to stand up, but her goggles revealed a latticework of metal girders holding the ceiling tiles in place. Exhaust vents all around the edges of the building let in slashes of sunlight, and that's what she aimed for. Clodagh's training came in handy as she sprinted lightly along the narrow metal rail, knowing that any step onto a tile might send her crashing down into the Apodactyl nest below. Rage pushed her forward, and she kept her weight on her toes until she reached the nearest duct and slid her goggles down around her neck. She spread her weight over two different girders and used the knife to unscrew the vent's bolts. As it came loose, she gently let it fall sideways, still dangling by one screw. The scene outside was beautiful, but terrifying. Smooth green walls surrounded the valley, megaflora bursting from random oases amid the grass. The sky was headed to purple, the golden yellow of the wax spires and walls reflecting red rays of the setting sun. She was under an overhang directly below the roof of the building, three stories up. which normally would present no problem for her sentiments or her talents. But this time, hundreds of angry insects, roughly her own size, whirled in tornadoes of slashing rage, buzzing in and out of the doors, hunting and probing, compelled to punish whatever had dared to attack the hive. She scoped out the deadfall where she'd left her speeder and couldn't contain a growl. Clodagh knelt beside the engine, no doubt disabling it. Beside him crouched a fully grown narglatch bearing a saddle and panniers, its finned tail slashing the air and its claws digging into the grass. Now the codename made sense. Getting off the building would be no problem thanks to the rope she'd found on Tribulus's body. It was being spotted by the insects that worried her. She didn't have time to piece together her own armor as Night Drifter had, but she did have one disguise up her sleeve. Or, to be more precise, in her pocket. Soon, Basine was rubbing her reishi eel ink on the pale skin of her arms and chest, not covered by her black undershirt. She smudged the last of the tube's ink around her face. If she couldn't look like a Dak, she'd look like a shadow. Everything she'd taken from the cells above was hidden on her person, along with a few weapons Clodagh didn't know about. The coil of wire and nippers were hooked to Tribulus's belt, and she unwound the rope and tied the end firmly to the nearest ceiling girder. It wouldn't get her all the way to the ground, but it would get her close. Basine's hands were now covered in the reishi eel ink, which not only kept her from ever leaving finger or handprints behind, but also would provide some cushion for the rope's friction and mask her scent. Reaching down through the hole she'd made in the ceiling, she chipped off some wax pieces and rubbed them between her hands, hoping the wax would provide additional relief to the rope burn. As she stood at the open grate, tying a knot in the loop of rope around her waist, an inquisitive buzzing in the hole she'd just vacated told her the time had come to jump. She backed out of the narrow hole feet first and rappelled down the side of Facility 48, her boots sinking into the warm wax with every jump. Her palms burned hot, but not nearly as hot as the rage in her chest, as she glanced over her shoulder and saw Clodagh slip the metal case into one of his panniers. She let herself fall faster until she ran out of rope just before she hit the first story. Releasing the knot, she gave herself a meter of distance before letting go and landing on a smooth slope of wax. It was thankfully the easiest landing of her career, and she slid down the slick incline until she was able to roll to standing where the remaining grass met the edge of the hive. Whether it was their white-hot focus on finding the intruder or her all-black costume, the Apodactyls hadn't spotted her. Yet. And neither had Clodagh. He was talking on a comm now, one very similar to hers, laughing. She knew how to take him down, but it was going to be tricky. She had to be close, but not too close. And he had to be far away from her speeder and the hive. She had to time her actions perfectly. Basine darted behind the trash pile, running all the way around it to the far edge. She waited as Clodagh mounted his narglatch and checked his gear. She checked her gear, too, lifting her boot to release and palm her last thermal detonator. As he took off at a lope, she sprinted behind him, depressed the trigger, and lobbed the metal sphere directly ahead of his path. With a resounding boom, the ground disappeared in a 10-meter-wide depression. The great cat yowled and fell, taking Clodagh with it. By the time she'd run to the edge of the crater, Basine's mentor and once friend was climbing over the edge, bruised and scratched up, but mostly unharmed. Which was exactly how Basine wanted it. Revenge wasn't as sweet when your enemy was already dead. He pulled himself to level ground just as she reached striking distance, but he couldn't get to his blaster in time. She aimed her first kick at his face, then landed a pointed toe in his side. He'd once chided her for her taste in footwear. Who spied in 12-centimeter heels? Let him laugh now with his broken ribs. Everything she did for a reason. You can't hide bombs in flat shoes. The Narglatch made a leap at the edge of the crevasse, swiping at her with heavy claws before falling back down again. She danced back, just as Clodagh snatched for her ankle, taking her down to one knee. He was a dirty fighter, the kind of man who packed poison under his ragged fingernails, and had once beaten a man to death with his metal leg. But knowing his ways had taught her to prepare for such a fight, and she knew his nails couldn't get through her thick leggings. She kicked at him, dislodging his hand, but he had enough strength to make another grab for her leg and pull her back.
"Oh, no, you don't," he growled.
He wanted a close fight? Fine, she'd give him one. A betrayal as personal as his deserved a death just as intimate, after all. Basine changed tactics. Instead of trying to get her distance and regroup, she pounced on him, straddled his chest, and snaked an arm behind his thick neck.
"Gonna kiss me, Jackrabbit?"
he asked with a chuckle, and the shift of his arm told her he was going for a knife. She put on the choke quickly and mercilessly, cutting off both his breath and his blood. His face went red as she felt a knife repeatedly slam and skitter off the plating and fiber mesh in her undershirt. Her smile was as dark as her lips. "If I kissed you, it would be too easy."
"Not my type, anyway."
"Give up, old man. You lost."
"Taught you everything you know. Didn't teach you this."
"I wanted a second opinion," she answered. "So I trained at some other schools. And I'm keeping your ship." He bucked and struggled, but even a man as strong and tough as Delphi Clodagh couldn't live without oxygen. There was something satisfying in the way his knowing, judgmental eye bulged in surprise and fear, and she toyed with the idea of letting him live just so she could taunt him. But she couldn't help remembering the bedtime stories he'd told her as a child, how he'd hunted men down for betraying him.
"Leave an enemy alive and you'll never stop looking over your shoulder," he'd told her. "That's how I lost my eye. Didn't try it again."
He'd tapped the black leather patch and winked, and she laughed and swore she never would. But he just had, hadn't he? And now, she wanted to. But she wouldn't. Because she knew better than anyone what Clodagh could do when he wanted something. This man had killed everyone she'd gotten close to, people whose names she'd purposefully forgotten. He might have even killed Ori already. She wouldn't know until she got back to the Sparrowhawk at the spaceport. She had to end Clodagh before he found a way to escape. Closing her eyes, she cranked the choke hard, crushing his windpipe and snapping his neck. He'd betrayed her, but he'd saved her first. She closed his eye and stood, tall and proud. Perhaps he'd sought to forge her into the perfect weapon, but the sharpening had been her own doing. Time to finish the job.